Yep, go ahead, turn the recorder on, Gina.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Please be advised that a special meeting of the Administrative and Operations Committee of the Annuity and Pension Board has been scheduled for today, Thursday, May 22nd, 2025, starting at 9 a.m. The Employees Retirement System, 789 North Water Street, C300. If a quorum of the board is present via teleconference, this meeting will convene as a special board meeting. We have two items on the agenda today. First one's going to be presentations by the RFP semifinalists for managing recruiting firms. And, oh, I'm sorry, could we get a roll call first?
Sure. Mr. Christensen?
Here.
Mr. DeClean, not attending. Ms. Ford?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovak is not attending. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Thank you. And Mr. Helling?
Here.
Quorum.
Alrighty.
Mr. Helling?
So again, Jen.
Mr. DeClean is actually on the public line. I'm going to send him an email so he can join the main meeting, just so you know.
Okay, should we give him a minute?
If you want, otherwise.
He can go ahead and, it'll be a few minutes here probably before the presentation starts, so. It looks like we have Corn Ferry here. Andrew Brown's going to be giving a presentation on the Corn Ferry.
My colleague Lindsay Heiger.
And Lindsay as well, I'm sorry.
No problem.
So go ahead and take it away.
Great. Well, thanks, everybody. Appreciate you making time and allowing us this opportunity to, you know, convince you of our experience in this space. First of all, appreciate the time. My name, we'll first start off with some introductions of who we are. My name is Andrew Brown. I'm a sector leader in financial services for Korn Ferry. I'm based in Toronto, but work all over North America, and I co-lead our pension, our public pension endowment and family office practice for Korn Ferry. That includes public sector, pension plans, private sector, asset management firms, and a lot of firms in between. I've been in the search business for about 16 years now, and have been a Korn Ferry employee for 4 years, and based just outside Toronto. And I will pass it over to my colleague, Lindsay.
Thanks, Andrew. Hi, everyone. My name is Lindsay Heiger. I have been with Korn Ferry just about 4 years as well, and I have been within the search business for, it's been 13 years now, and my area of focus is within financial services. Within financial services, my niche is working specifically with investment firms within the private and public sector, and so, you know, we are definitely excited to give you our little spiel today on our experience. And Andrew, let me just ask, do you want me to share the presentation?
Yeah, please. I was just going to ask if you can pull it up.
Yeah, so I will do a screen share here.
We might have to get it, because Terry's sharing his screen right now. We may have to swap that.
You should be okay.
Okay, we can? Okay, great.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. We put a visual presentation together just to help guide the conversation. And sometimes these conversations, you know, it's really just to make sure that we stick to stay on point and stay on topic.
Can you see, is the sharing?
Can you make that a tad bigger?
Yes.
Please, thank you.
Is this better?
Keep going. Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay.
So not present today is a managing partner in our Washington, D.C. office, Kate Shattuck. Kate and I and Lindsay round out the team that works with public sector pension plans. The majority of the experience that Korn Ferry has amassed over the past few years in this space has largely been because of the three of us, as well as an additional colleague who has subsequently retired in the last year. But we keep him on as a special advisor. His name is Michael Kennedy, and he is based out of Atlanta. So Kate was supposed to be here today, but because of prior commitments, was not able to. But she is a co-lead and executive sponsor on this team and on the search as well.
Okay.
So this, I'm not sure, I hope this slide is, comes across legibly in the presentation. It might be easier, Terry, if you're able to share it with the rest of the team on email. We greatly appreciate that. But we thought we would just highlight some of the examples of work that we've done in this space over the past few years. One of the things that we'd like to call out is not just the geographical diversity of clients that we've worked with in this space, but also the functions as well. A lot of these were chief investment officers, but our experience is not limited to that. So we certainly have spent considerable time partnering with leadership teams, partnering with boards to put together search strategies to execute executive director mandates. And we can get to more of the specifics of that in a moment. If there's any questions, Terry, I'm not sure. I know that you had the second half of this as sectioned off for questions, but if anyone has anything you'd like to ask us during the course of the presentation, please feel free to chime in if you feel that's appropriate for the form of the presentation, Terry. So, why Korn Ferry? I think that's a good question. And I think, something that we take very seriously is our reputation as an organization. We were just named as the world's leading executive search firm globally by Forbes, and something that we are very humble, an award we're humble to accept and quite proud of. And every day is an opportunity to uphold that reputation in the marketplace. And a big part of that reputation in the marketplace is our commitment to process. So up on the screen here, might be a little bit tough to read in mine, but hopefully it's easier to read on your screen, are the main characteristics of a typical search process. Korn Ferry invests a lot of time at the beginning of a process for stakeholder engagement. We can't have a successful outcome if we haven't done, put in the work at the beginning. And that in terms of stakeholder engagement, connecting with all the leaders, people that have opinions and thoughts around the hire, what success looks like in the search, but also in the job itself, and understanding what the goalposts are for the job. So the alignment of vision is really to get to know your organization as well as we can, and to speak with and interview stakeholders for the position to really get a sense of what good looks like, the culture, the types of personalities that would fit within this role, and ultimately what success would be in this ED role specifically. Once we have an agreed vision, which includes a robust job description and position profile that we will go to market with, then we start to identify candidates. This is an area that we feel Korn Ferry is particularly strong in because of our reputation in this space. If you recall that the previous slide had about 20 very large, high-profile public employers as clients, and every search that we do is really an opportunity to leverage our network for your benefit. And that would be things like sourcing great candidates and people that are executive directors currently, people that we feel are ready to become executive directors in the future. These are candidates that we would all bring together in the creation of what we call a long list. So once we identify the universe, what we call the universe of all candidates that are to be considered, we then start interviewing them. And that's when Lindsay and I, along with Kate, start to assess candidates' technical abilities, their leadership characteristics, as well as any, going through their historical resume and background to create a profile for you to help you make a decision about moving forward with an interview or not. Evaluation process is in the middle, that column there. That's largely, it says Korn Ferry Partners, but at some point that becomes over to you as well. So once we finish our interview process of screening and selecting candidates, then we schedule a meeting and present the shortlist to you. And that looks typically anywhere 3 to 5, likely more closer to 5 candidates that are screened, vetted, interviewed, and had references done. These are candidates that we would definitely stand behind to present to you for consideration for the role. And And then at that point, that's when your process begins of interviewing them for yourself. Lindsay and I can be present for those interviews if you like. We don't have to be. It's really up to you if you choose for us to be part of your interview process. But again, it's up to you. Lindsay, did you want to take the final selection here?
Certainly. Thanks, Andrew. So basically, you know, on our final selection of candidates, as Andrew was mentioning, you know, what we do is we sort of, we will basically decide what the interview process or plan looks like that best fits with your organization. So whether that's meeting with the entire board or whatnot. And, you know, we'll make sure that the candidate is brought fully through the interview process. We'll meet with you as a team to try to help with the final selection of candidates. And as Andrew has mentioned, you know, during this time, we may do additional reference checks, whatever is kind of needed to try to help get to terms with making the right decision. We also will help to negotiate basically, you know, the compensation package with candidates. Part of our screening process will be going into in-depth detail as to what candidates are looking for from a compensation package that would be interesting to them, making sure that we're communicating that information to you guys so that we can help put together a right package for the right individual to get them on board. We'll help with the negotiation of all the terms of that package. And then, you know, we'll kind of move forward to the transition process. So we are happy to be involved as much as you would like us to be with the transition of the new employee. So we will help with onboarding. We will help with any coaching that may need to come up on both ends, from the candidate to your team, to help ensure a smooth transition for all involved. And then also, you know, we will, if you would like, we will get involved with kind of helping the new executive who's coming on board with whatever their 100-day plan might be as they're coming into the organization. And then we'll continue to stay involved with follow-up within that first year of the candidate being on board, just to make sure that everything is going smoothly and that the transition is successful and seamless as possible. And just wanted to speak about timeline here, because you do notice there is a timeline listed anywhere from 3 to 6 months. So quite frankly, our goal is always to find a candidate within 100 days and place them. That is typically our goal on our team. That timeline can vary depending on the client, the nature of the search. Does it always happen in 100 days? No. But for the majority of the time, we do get a candidate in the seat within 100 days. But a lot of this is driven largely on the client. So how long the interview process takes, the nature of the role, how specific it can be. You know, sometimes in the public sector, things don't always move as quickly, but with some organizations, we see that it does. So, you know, we can try to help manage, you know, depending, we'll basically align ourselves with whatever your timeline goal is. So if you want to be very aggressive and get someone in the door very quickly, we will mirror that and deliver to what your expectations would be to have this person in there.
Thanks, Lindsay. I'll tackle that for K40. So a big part of our offering is the rigor around the selection of the candidate. And a big important tool that we use in that process is our executive assessment, which is included in the fee that we quoted. The KF4D, so four dimensions of Korn Ferry is what we call it. That is a multifaceted assessment tool where we ask the stakeholders and or the selection committee at the beginning of the search to complete a 20-minute force ranking survey around the goals, the priorities, the objectives, and the desirable traits of the successful candidate. Once we amalgamate all of those people, and I see there's quite a few stakeholders on the call. Frankly, the more who can complete that survey, the more the better. Once we get a template of basically where the field goals are for this search, then at the once we get to a point where we've identified some finalist candidates, then we ask the candidates on their end to complete their end of the process. So that is a bit longer. The candidate side of the process takes a bit longer, about an hour. That is something that is generated, a report is generated after that. We sit down with the selection committee with our assessment bureau, a guy named John Ashburn, who is not part of the search team, but spends all his time working with our clients on debriefing assessment results and helping you understand in a bit more rigor the types of the candidates that you are considering for hire. It never leads to a binary yes or no, you should hire this person or you should not hire this person. What it does reveal are areas of strengths, areas of development, and areas of opportunity where this candidate can lean in and grow into certain traits, or it also allows the board some insights into how to best work with this person. So clients are frequently requesting this. We actually get clients asking for this assessment, even if they're not doing the search with us. That's how much they've enjoyed in the past. And it's a big part of our offering. And I think clients that use our assessment tool have a much, much higher placement ratio 2 years after the hire once they do this assessment tool. So we stand by it. It's free, and clients feel it's quite effective. Anything else you wanted to add, Lindsay, on the KF4D piece?
No, I think you covered it really well. But yeah, as Andrew was mentioning, it's a great way for you, and I'll just kind of go back to this slide. It's a great way for clients to understand the competencies from a technical perspective, as well as the traits and drivers of a candidate. And if we administer this sort of earlier on in the process or midway through the process, what it can help do is identify the strengths and the weaknesses of a candidate. And we can actually generate an interview guide based on their results that is very helpful for clients going through the interview process, because it can kind of give things certain areas that need to be dug in during the screening process, which we will provide to you, and you can, you know, dig into the candidates about this. And also what clients will use it for is it also will create a guide for them of once the candidate is on board of ways of areas that they may need managed around once they're within the organization, or just, you know, topics to stay on top of to help to basically help to develop the candidate's skill set even more as they're in the role.
Okay, this is just an example on the right-hand side of some of the reports that get generated with each candidate as they complete the report. So it measures 6 career motivating factors, assesses 20 personality traits, and 30 leadership competencies. They do get grouped into critical, mission critical, and preferred. So it's almost like essential, nice to have, and an additional category. So the weightings depend on how much the selection committee spends or chooses each category. So why us? I mean, you put the RFP out, and I'm sure there are a lot of responses and interest in wanting to partner with you, including ourselves. We're very interested in partnering with you on this mandate. I think this is an intersection of our experience and interest and capability all wrapped up into one. But why us? You know, I think that at the beginning we shared a slide of the profile of the Korn Ferry team, myself, Lindsay, and Kate, plus all of Korn Ferry. There's 9,500 of us globally. Financial services is one of the biggest practices within our business. The amount of leverage, momentum, and networking that goes on within that, the collaborative nature, of our organization lends itself to being very successful for our clients at the end of the day. You know, we're well plugged into the public pension plan space. Members of NASSER certainly have that industry understanding of what it's like to recruit for this specific role within these types of firms. We have a number of advisors to us. These are industry experts. These are former executive search people. I mentioned Michael Kennedy at the beginning. He's kind of an alumni of ours, but we haven't let him go too far. We still have him on as a consulting advisor to some of our public sector clients and engagements. Sorry, did someone say something? No. Okay. And our database, I think we feel our technology and our ability to access talent in a way that others can't, I think puts us apart from other search firms. I think every search that gets completed, I mean, on the previous slide with all those tiles of previous searches, we probably speak to about 200 to 300 people on every search. So even though there's only one placement at the end of every search, there's 200 to 300 individuals that we've connected with. And good people always know good people. So the referral networks, people pick up the phone when they see Korn Ferry calling because they know that the client is taking that search very seriously. So they call us back. Our response rate is quite high, and that's to the benefit of the clients. Moving through time. 10:22. Okay. I think I'm on time. One more. That's it, Lindsay.
Yeah, so happy to take questions.
Yeah, we know there's a lot we went through in 22 minutes. Maybe happy to start the questions a little earlier. You know, we have some questions as well, so I'm not sure of the order in which you want that to happen, Terry. So maybe we can have this more as a discussion.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Lindsay. You say something? Go ahead, Terry.
No, I was just going to tell it all. It's saying it's you, for you. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. yeah, let's just open it up to board members if got any questions.
Mr. Chair, this is Bill.
Yep, go ahead, Bill.
My question is, what is the typical composition of a set of finalists as far as, you know, are these executive directors for smaller plans or other types of plans? Is it deputies or CIOs does it often include candidates from other fields, like who aren't necessarily specialists in the pension world? I was wondering if you could speak kind of broadly to the types of finalists that you pull in for pension plans.
Yeah, absolutely. Good question. In general, I mean, if we were to say a list of, you know, three or four candidates that are finalists, but there's typically a mix of EDs at smaller plans. There are people that are deputies currently. They might be the second, they might have the number two job at a bigger plan, but feel that this role with you represents the next step in their career. All the categories that you mentioned are very realistic possibilities. There might be a member of a subcategory in the short list, except for I don't see CIOs too frequently putting up their hands for ED roles, although, you know, it could change, but I know that CIOs are typically very myopic in terms of wanting to own the investment process, and that's their life, and that's the kind of the trajectory they came up through. And you know, stepping into an ED role from a CIO is not as common, but it's certainly possible. So yeah, I would definitely say that that's a common shortlist that you might see.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chair, I've just got one other question for now. Do you do any post-placement follow-up, like surveys or anything like that, satisfaction surveys, either about the process or about the candidate or the selection of of finalists that they were presented with? Do you have anything, any kind of metrics like that that you've tracked?
We do, and we do send a client satisfaction survey at the end of every engagement just to understand, you know, what went well, what, you know, what, where could we improve at the end of the day. We do also do that on the candidate side too. So candidate experience is something that we take very seriously. You know, the search business in general has a reputation sometimes of being fairly transactional and sometimes forgetting that every candidate on any search is a potential client sometime in the future. And that's something that we take very seriously for every interaction that we make with them. Even though there's going to be people that don't get this job, and they're going to be unhappy if they were considered. So managing that expectation properly is something that we, you know, put a lot of effort in. In terms of metric, Tim, I'm curious, you know, do you mind speaking, maybe adding, kind of explaining a bit more of the question?
Oh, yeah, this is Bill. I'm just wondering if you have any, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your experience with, you know, communication or with the candidate selection or anything like that? So any type of metrics. And I'm sure you don't have it now, but if there is anything that you are ultimately able to share with us, I think I would personally find that beneficial.
We absolutely can, you know, share something with you at a later date, for sure. I mean, I think the communication piece in a search, like, you know, this is a, you know, arguably a piece of business that will take several months, and the communication and the updates from us will be a regular occurrence, usually weekly, although sometimes at the beginning that's a bit too frequent. But whether it's an email, whether it's a big call like this, no one's really accused us of under communicating in a search process. Because there's always an opportunity to, you know, revise, to refine, to, you know, really engage with our clients to make sure that we're communicating frequently and in the way that they prefer.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, Tom has...
Yep. Go ahead, Tom.
Good morning. I have three questions so far. First one is the hardest. What does Korn Ferry stand for? What does your name mean? Is that a combination of like firms that merged, or I've never heard?
Oh, the actual names themselves.
Yeah, it's just for context. What is kind of an odd name? No offense, but what is it?
I'm taking it's an odd, especially Korn with a K. I get it.
Yeah, right. So it's, you know, all the other firms have, like, you know, regular firm names. Yours just strikes me as, so maybe there's some meaning behind it. I was just, that might be significant.
It is a combination of the surnames of our two founders, Lester Korn and William Ferry. Organizational psychologists in the 60s. We've grown to a $1 billion company through acquisitions over the past 40 years. But that's literally what we stand for.
Oh, great. Okay. Yep. That makes a lot of sense to me. I just thought it was something I didn't know about. So the second question is similar to Bill's, kind of. Do you do any, and if you don't have this data, then just say you don't, but I guess you can quickly tell us that all of your searches, 100% of them resulted in placement. And, you know, like in the dating world, you seems to me like a firm like yourselves sets up the couple and you attend the wedding and everyone's happy. Do you do any research down the road for some amount of time? You know, you're the academics, so maybe 2 to 3 years to see how many of your placements are still in their roles?
Yeah. We do in this particular sector, because I think there's a lot of emphasis that should be placed on the sector as opposed to doing that metric for everything we do, because some sectors just, you know, they change more quickly or more frequently. We'd be kind of in the low 80s around after 3 years for roles of this nature. So kind of 82-83% of candidates that we place in a similar role to this will be there in that role in 3 years' time.
Well, good, yeah, good. That's a significant piece, I think, because, well, you're way ahead of the marriage success rate, so. and then the third, that is a good number. And then the third question is that regarding your amendments to our RFP, well, getting into particulars,
okay.
You know, we're told that you want some changes. Are you hard and fast on those, or are those negotiable?
I mean, it depends on what they are, which ones you're referring to, Tom. In general, we're pretty flexible.
Okay, in general, you do what we do. You reach for your ideal, and then you talk later?
It's for certain things. For other things, you know, we don't have any flexibility. So I'm not sure what specific topic you're talking about, and I'll have to run that by our legal team who reviewed that document. But if it's for certain things like insurance, there's no flexibility there. We have to have what we do, but for other kind of maybe commercial terms, depending on what you're referring to, we can have a discussion.
Okay. Yeah, I was just looking for a hard no, and that's not a hard no, so.
It's not a hard no, but it might be a no, depending on.
Okay. Yeah, right. Yep. I understand that. Right. That's the thing on our end. Yep.
Fair enough.
And then just one last one that I guess I should have thought of sooner is, I saw some of the things in yours that we may, and I'm only speaking for myself, not the whole board, that we may or may not need in your total palette here of items. And your fee is a little on the higher side of your competitors. Is that a fixed fee, or if we chose not to, I'll just use that as an example. Your 100-day plan and whatnot, and your post-placement services. What if a firm didn't need that? Is that, are you hard and fast on that also?
I see what you mean, like more of an a la carte offering.
And not a lot of a la carte, but a little a la carte, because it's like, sometimes you're paying for things you don't want, and then I'd hate to have, you know, a top contender, you know, lose out on a fee that really isn't necessary for things we're not going to use, if you follow my meaning.
Yeah, I understand.
And if you can't speak to it, you can't. You can just say, I don't know.
But, I mean, our offering is something that, you know, we feel that this is something that, you know, we're a search firm, we do this all the time. We feel this is what's included in our process is best practices. Now, that being said, if there's a part of the process that clients don't feel is necessary, then absolutely we can take it out. It doesn't have any significant impact on the fee in general, in my experience of what we've done here. Once we get in to start, you know, cutting the fee based on, you know, post 100-day placement, that's not typically what we do.
Okay. Yeah, well, just good. Okay, that's all I had. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Any other questions from board members? Yep, go ahead, Deborah.
Okay. I had a couple of questions. In terms of the process that you use, you talked about interviewing stakeholders, okay, and spending some time with us, with the board, finding out what we're looking for. But then you talked about the survey, having us fill out a survey. Can I have a little more detail? Because I'm trying to figure out how those two fit together. And then what do you do with the survey results? I mean, are you developing a consensus? If you see a pattern, do you work with the board on figuring out where the boundaries are? I mean, if that's the way to put it.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So, a good question. Thank you for that. They're in some ways, they're not related all that much. And what I mean by that is the conversations that Lindsay and I would have with you and other stakeholders to determine, kind of build out a job description or an ideal profile of a candidate. That's kind of, that's a bit more tactical. That's one thing. The separate thing is the survey, and that's the survey, the assessment piece you're referring to. That helps us kind of identify key traits and drivers of the successful candidates. So you're right, like we are basically asking you to create a consensus or at least a ranking around what you think is the most important thing or things this candidate will have. And then once we take the assessment from the candidate, then we basically overlay it on the consensus that you and your colleagues created, and then sit down with John and do the debrief at that point.
And you create the consensus based on the responses to the survey.
Yeah, what we did, I did it recently with a client where they wanted, it's not always, they don't always ask this, but this client did, they wanted to see what their consensus was. So what they did was they filled out the stakeholder part of the assessment, and then I had John create a report just to summarize those results. And it was really interesting to see, because this was before the candidates did it. This was early in the process. So it was a specific report that got generated just for displaying kind of a graphic that looks pretty cool, just for displaying what the traits were that everyone voted for as a, you know, as pretty important for this role.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
That helps. I was wondering how you take those responses, hopefully create a consensus that you can use, and that's important feedback for the board.
It gives parameters. I mean, what it doesn't do, and it can't do this, is, or want to, is make everybody agree on what's the most important thing. I mean, that'll never happen. And frankly, nor should it, but it gives us kind of an idea of the universe that we're dealing with and how that kind of leads into our assessments and what Lindsay and I decide is the best candidate or the best five will be a function of the conversations that you and I have at the beginning.
And some of my questions you've already answered previously, but in terms of determining stakeholders, is that a group that's determined by ERS, or is that something you're looking to sort of figure out? How does that work?
It could be anyone. It's not up to us to decide who the stakeholders are.
Okay.
If you feel that there are individuals that will work, that should opine on the ED position, then that's a stakeholder. People that will work with this person the most, the other senior people, they tend to be CIO, CFO, they tend to be pretty significant stakeholders for ED jobs as well.
Okay. I think that answers all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Deborah. Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions? I just had one. You mentioned you'll bring in or you'll interview 200 to 300 people. Just the marketing aspect, get into that, how you get the word out. And
yeah,
I mean, are you actually calling people or, you know, people applying and kind of working through that whole scenario?
Fair enough. If we're selected and if it's okay to post publicly, according to the client, and we typically do, you know, we want the word to spread that you're looking for a new ED and that Parnberry is your selected partner for vetting and screening all the candidates. It's a bit of a push and pull scenario when we're sourcing candidates. On the one hand, we post it everywhere. We post it on LinkedIn, if that's okay with you. We post it on our website and share it with our networks. So we get a lot of people coming to us, but that's only, I'd say that's a third of our efforts. The other two thirds of our efforts are proactive. This is where, you know, the term headhunting comes from. is when Lindsay and I and the associate that will join us on this file start picking up the phone and reaching out to people that may not have applied to a job necessarily because their heads are down, they're working hard, they're not really focused on any other opportunities. But if they get a call from us, they might be interested. They might think, you know what, I'm not looking, but that sounds like a really interesting job, so let's chat. And one of the best compliments that we get from a placed candidate is, I wasn't looking for a job, but you called me and this sounded really good. And that's probably about two-thirds of our time, because those candidates are a little harder to find, not as visible on social media or on some of the other networks, but within the industry and the NASA relationships that we have, that's certainly a big source for us in terms of people that we target.
Chime in there a little bit. Something else too that I just wanted to make note of or make mention is I think with this search in particular, of course, if we have your blessing, we will advertise it and get the word out there. But really, in these type of searches with very specific locations that may not be a hotbed for a financial services market, we will be doing a lot of outreach into our internal network of candidates. We've got several searches right now that are, for example, I've got multiple searches that I've just recently worked on based out of Lynchburg, Virginia, and it's all within financial services, and finding, you know, people in that market can be challenging. So we really rely on kind of our outreach methods within our own network. And I think what benefits us a lot with that is, you know, no one's actively thinking about, or what we're experiencing is people are not actively thinking about moving to Lynchburg, but they hear from Korn Ferry and they associate Korn Ferry with usually unique or exciting opportunities because we have such a large brand name. And so that allows us to engage people that would not normally listen. And then typically, you know, if we're able to sell the opportunity well, and usually they are exciting opportunities, you know, we're able to engage candidates in that manner. And something else too that we have available to us that greatly helps us with kind of speed to market is we have a research team that sits in Manila. So our research team in Manila helps support us here in the US, and what they do is they will help source candidates overnight for us. So when we come in the morning, we have a, you know, new list of fresh candidates that fit the target profile to reach out to. They'll also help us to track down contact information of candidates so we can get in touch with them quickly. So just kind of the overall way that we're structured and the support we have helps us to get out to candidates quickly when we need to do sort of more of an aggressive outreach campaign.
Thank you, Lindsay and Andrew. Other questions?
I did have one more question.
Go ahead.
I see in the materials that you placed, I think it says the CEO for the State Investment Board. How long ago was that? Or did I read that wrong?
Can we go back up to the page, Lindsay?
Yeah.
The State Investment Board.
Yeah, and I'm certain this was Michael Kennedy.
This was Michael. State Investment Board. I mean, anything that we do, we have a rule in our system where we don't share anything prior to 5 years ago.
Okay.
Because sometimes it's too old and not as relevant. You know, a lot can change in 5 years. So, pardon me. So, if it's on a document somewhere, it's probably within the last 5 years. We don't go back any farther than that.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Welcome.
Any other questions from board members? Or else you mentioned, Andrew, that you have some questions for us.
Yeah, we do. I think 15 minutes, that's plenty of time. How are we doing for time, Terry? Are we okay?
Good.
All right, we're good. Okay, so just general question to anyone that wants to take this one. You know, Lindsay and I are quite keen on partnering with you and representing you in the marketplace and leading this search. One of the things that, you know, in addition to the RFP, and that was quite clearly laid out, is, you know, what are you looking for in a successful partner? Obviously, experience and robust process and a reasonable price, you know, seem to be kind of assumed. But is there anything else specifically that you're looking to hear from us or the other firms to help make your decision?
And everyone all at once.
Tom can answer for himself.
Go ahead, Tom. Okay.
And I hope the rest of the board. I think our contract will be easy, at least for probably what you have to do is our search is due to a retirement, not like problems or we've fallen by the wayside and we fired a bunch of people or we've got some embedded problems like our county does. We want you to find another candidate like the one we have, and he'll probably be your primary point of contact. So all you have to do is stick him in a copy machine and find another guy like him. Rather than give you a questionnaire, you could probably just meet our current person and then just try to find those kinds of traits in a successor. If that makes sense.
And that's really helpful, not just from a copy him perspective, that person, but also your reputation. This is a retirement. This is a good news story. Some of the logos that we shared of previous work that we've done did not enjoy such a favorable public reputation. And that's a nice way of putting it, isn't it? And we had to work with that. I mean, we can't change public perception of some of the unfavorable news of some of our other clients, but with you specifically, this is a good news story. It's a retirement, someone's moving on, and big shoes to fill, and we're confident that we can find someone to fill them.
Good, thanks.
I have
a question. You first, Lindsay. I ask the next one. So go ahead. Go first.
Mine is more housekeeping, so maybe yours, I don't know, but I'll go ahead. Just out of curiosity, I know you were kind of mentioning of coming back to us potentially about items in the contract. What is the process going to look like from here on out from vendor selection?
Once a vendor has been chosen, we will then initiate negotiation.
Got it.
We expect decision in late June.
Great. And my next question is for everyone is what, and I think Tommy partly answered this in advance, so thank you, but what do you feel might be some of the bigger challenges with filling this job? For any search firm that you hire.
I mean, it's just the institutional knowledge that Jerry has, and you've been here for over 15 years, and just is an encyclopedia of knowledge of everything to know about our system. And I know every pension plan is a little bit different, and ours is very nuanced, and just jumping right in and learning all that stuff is going to be a challenge, no matter who gets it, I think.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Deborah.
I also think this is Wisconsin, and there's it's political in some ways, and someone who's comfortable navigating that, you know, on a number of levels.
Mm-hmm. And chances are, for a candidate to be successful in the search process, they will have demonstrated somewhere in their career an ability to navigate a similar environment. Whether that's another plan, another public entity, you know, who knows, but you know, chances are most of the people that we place in this space are not, you know, completely private sector individuals. You know, they do have an understanding that this is the way things are in public sector, and you know, they've demonstrated an ability to navigate through that quite well.
Do they will they understand we're also a closed plan?
We will communicate that. Okay. I mean, part of the intake process at the beginning of the search is making sure that, you know, Lindsay and I put our arms around everything to do with, you know, with your organization and to position this role in the most accurate way. I mean, our job is really to facilitate the candidate's true experience to you, and also to facilitate the job to the candidate in the most accurate way. So every factor of your, you know, employment opportunity will be shared with the client. Sorry, the candidate. Yeah. What, in opportunities like this, where organizations are recruiting a retirement, especially in a role like this, and sometimes organizations take an opportunity to change or to add or to alter in some way the direction of the firm. They use this as I'm doing a CEO search right now for a public entity, and the CEO was great, but they're taking it in a slightly different direction, and that has implications on who they hire and therefore who they tell us to find. You know, is that a situation here?
Tom can jump in on that one. That was why I asked you about your 100-day plan. I really don't want a guy that's going to come in here with an ego and have a 100-day plan like some people currently, and tell it all the things I changed in 100 days. So a 100-day plan should be, we look as good as we did 100 days ago. So yeah, that's what you'd hear from me is don't find us a big change agent or a name maker person that wants to leave their mark or get in the news. That's why I asked about that.
Yeah, we really tailor it specific to each client's needs. So if that's not a need, you know, we will not be focused on that. It really depends on what the ask is. That would probably be the largest ask that we would have coming from a client, is to be involved in that process, but it doesn't need to be.
Deborah makes an excellent point that whoever the candidate is needs to have a huge stomach for dealing with politics. We're a government plan, so we're governed by politicians, and mm-hmm. You know, our current director has testified both in local government, state government, on our behalf, and you know, the person would have to have an aptitude for that. It's different, you know. Some might say, well, yeah, it's the same in the corporate world, you're dealing with boards, but you're really not, because in the private sector, the heads of agencies are dealing with their money, and politicians are dealing with other people's money, and their only driver is election and re-election. So it's a totally different animal.
Yeah. I would also, are you done, Tom? I'm sorry, I didn't mean it.
No.
My other comment is that no two individuals are alike, and with all due respect, Tom, we won't find a clone of Jerry. So we will expect to see some differences. Now, how they present themselves or how we receive them, it's all part of the process. But I want to be realistic about the fact that we're happy with Jerry, but we will not get a clone of Jerry. People will bring something to the table that's different, and we just have to evaluate whether or not that works for us.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah, I was going to kind of echo you, Deborah, and
Change is always a bad thing, and yeah, we're not going to be getting a call in the jury, so.
And part of the stakeholder engagement process in the beginning is getting to know Jerry and getting to know what about him do you like the most and what are the things that we have to duplicate in another candidate and what are the things, because you're right, we won't find another person like him, but we might find someone who has very similar values, experience, and understanding that might look at things in a slightly different way because he or she is a different person. That's to be expected. So I'm relieved to hear that the client thinks that too, because you're right. There's no two clones out there. You know, they say in a perfect world, if two candidates were equal, but in reality, two candidates are never equal in terms of experience, style, presentation, etc.
Yeah, maybe I wasn't. I was trying to be brief, but I know there's
no. I know exactly what you mean.
If you shoot the characteristics, we'll find someone as close as we can. I know twins, and they're very different. So, that goes unsaid. Yeah.
Thank you. Being mindful of time and calendar. Lindsay, is there anything else that you wanted to add, or we can wrap up?
No, feel good. Thank you. Okay. I just want to say thank you so much for your time and for allowing us to bid and present.
Thank you, Lindsay, and thank you, Andrew. We got a lot to mull over here, and we'll definitely be in touch.
We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for your time and your questions, and we would love to partner with you on this work. And thanks again for this.
Have a good day. Bye, everyone. Alrighty. We had Baker Tilly back out. I don't know, Jerry, if you want to touch on that.
Sure. Well, thanks. First of all, thank you, Tom and Tim, for your kind words. But I want to reassure you that the country was able to replace both Lincoln and Kennedy right away, so I'm sure you'll be able to replace me without too much difficulty, especially if you have the aid of one of the fine firms that we're considering. Baker Tilly announced to Mary a couple days ago this week that they're no longer providing services in this area, so they're going out of this business, and they withdrew their proposal. Also, we were unable to get one of the other remaining firms to fill in today on such short notice. So this is really the only presentation that we have that we'll be seeing today. And then I would like to note, and Tim, you jump in whenever you want to, because this is really the chair function to a large extent. Item number two, staff, we placed this in here as a placeholder in the event that the trustees wanted to deliberate on the subject that was noticed, to receive legal advice regarding the terms of the contract and consider the strategy for bargaining the contract. However, I would note that we've only seen one presentation, so I'm not sure whether it's at the pleasure of the trustees, whether they want to go in closed session now to talk after only one presentation, or do you want to wait until after the other presentations, which are tentatively scheduled for June 3rd, based on the quick polling that we did to see what, who would be available for June 3rd. So it's at the pleasure of the board, I guess, as to whether they want to consider going in a closed session. And then, of course, if the June 3rd date is not good any longer for folks, we'd probably like to hear about that too. Tim, you have anything else you wanted to add on any of these topics?
No, we can just open it up. If anyone does want to go into a closed session, we can certainly do that, or we can wait till after we've heard all the interviews. Any opinions?
I don't see any need to go into closed session today after just one.
This is Bill. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree too.
Tom has a couple questions. Did I miss something? I mean, if if Baker Tilly backed out a couple days ago, it would have been nice to have got an email on that, so I, you know, so we can plan our day like we planned on two presentations, just so we can know that, that that's, and I don't have June 3rd on my calendar. Did I miss something or?
Well, Tom, I did try to call you, and I, you're right, I probably should have sent you an email, but I was, I tried a couple of days and I wasn't able to get a hold of you. So,
good.
But if, Jan polled everybody, I thought, Jan, did you not?
Yes, we did.
On June 3rd?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, was that your original poll of just let me know what dates you're not available for the month?
That's
or
correct.
Did someone say, yes, well, that's different than, okay, we got people booked on June 3rd, so pencil it in because.
And the packets will be going, the packets will go out next Wednesday. The board meeting is Tuesday, the 27th. The other two packets will go out on Wednesday.
Okay, so we do have a 9 a.m. on June 3rd?
Yes. I can send an outlook.
Okay.
That work for you, Tom, and does that work for everybody else?
I would join Tom in like for these interviews because they're so important. I know we have a standard period of time that we notify people, but if we're, and we can sort of plan for board meetings because they take place at the same time, but for these meetings which are occurring kind of special and off days, once we look like we have, may have a consensus, could we get a notice out as quickly as possible?
I mean,
we can plan accordingly.
We can have the packets delivered today if you want.
Oh, no, no, just an email saying tentatively it looks like the next interview day is going to be June 3rd because, you know, I found out, you know, when I, because I had heard that it might be June 3rd, so I called. But in terms of planning, I might not have kept June 3rd free because I, you know, I knew generally in the atmosphere there's a whole bunch of days available. But once it looked like the 3rd was going to be the day, as soon as we can get that notice out to members, and that may not occur again, but it would be helpful when we're having these special meetings that don't occur before in front of regularly scheduled meetings. That's my two cents.
Well, that's a good point, Deborah. Do you think we should, Tom and Deborah, you think we should circulate again to see if that date is still going to be good? For enough people?
I'm fine with it. I put it on my calendar, but like I said, I only happened to hear about it, so I had reserved it, so it was still available.
Bill, is it good with you?
Yeah, I just checked my calendar. The 3rd is good for me.
Okay. Good
for me. Mr. Chair, it's Matt.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt. I believe I'm working into that morning, but I will join as soon as I can at 9, so no need to just hold up for me.
Okay. Any other conflicts from any other members?
What about Rudy? He's out there. Is he still?
Yes. No, I just a little comment. When we get the emails, they all start out, please see the attached blah, blah, blah. And, you know, if you look at your headline, it doesn't say anything more. So it'd really be helpful if the emails would say, June 3rd meeting attached material. In other words, put the date first, because when we're, I'm looking through my emails and I'm trying to find the June 3rd one, but all I see is this same introductory thing about place the attached agenda. So my point is, by titling the emails with the date first, it'd be much easier to locate these things. Okay. Or am I just being too picky?
No, thank you, Rudy. I think the point that was noted just a minute ago, special meetings are different. The regular meetings are planned, you know, in November, the year in advance almost. But the special meetings require a little bit more, I think, attention because people have fluid calendars. So your points are well taken. We'll make sure to take them all to heart. Thank you.
Well, I'm good June 3rd.
Okay. And Justin, are you good?
Yeah, June 3rd works for me as well.
Okay. I think that's everybody that's going to be involved. So I think June 3rd is still a go.
I got one question that we should kind of keep in the back of our minds through the process.
Sure.
is, I think we used to do these interviews, manager interviews, in closed session. Doesn't it give kind of, to do this in open session, doesn't that kind of give an advantage to the later interviewees? Because they're hearing the interaction, they hear the other competitors' presentation. That gives me a little concern.
Well, I think I want to refer this one to Patrick, but I will note, Tom, that we spent an exceptional amount of time on the issue of open versus closed session with the city attorney's office in this last cycle. So Patrick, we want to go ahead and explain to the trustees, as Peter did recently, you know, where we're at today with closed session.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. And that's a great question, Tom. Good morning, everyone. There was a, and I believe we had a bit of discussion about this at the last board meeting, but there is now additional, due to a recent case, there are essentially additional requirements related to going into closed session for certain exceptions, which would be the exception that a scenario like this would fall under. In addition to that, there were some other considerations that I think I would be more comfortable talking to you offline about that just made us advise in an abundance of caution that these should be held in open session. So I can assure the board members, and if anybody has questions, please reach out to me. But I can assure the board members that, as Jerry indicated, we thoroughly discussed this issue and just decided that it would be most appropriate to do them in open session. Although there is probably a scenario in the future where we could do things like this in closed session. It would just depend on the circumstances. So I know that's probably an unsatisfying answer, but like I said earlier, I think I would rather provide some additional context offline rather than in this meeting.
Nope, that's good. As long as you looked at it, I trust your judgment. So we should just, as a rater, I'm going to keep in the back of my mind in case, you know, I hear some slick willies in the latter interviews clearly hacking off of what they heard earlier. But it's just something for us to keep in the back of our mind that the first person had a tougher go than the second and third.
I also think that it raises the question of how we schedule, that if we do have that concern, particularly if that's going to be the case when we're looking at candidates, actual candidates for the position, that we do them all pretty much in close proximity to each other so no one has an advantage. And I know that may create burdens for some people, but I'm sensitive to Tom's concern too.
Patrick,
that's a great point.
I'm not sure that we have to have the candidate interviews in open session. Patrick, you want to speak to that now or you want to talk about it later? But when it comes to personnel matter, that's a different exception.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I apologize if that was, I interpreted the question as relating specifically to the RFP. I think that's what the question was. But Jerry makes a good point that the candidate interviews are a different scenario altogether. There are different exceptions that would apply to considering the potential employment of individuals. So the concerns that I discussed earlier would not be the same essentially candidates have been identified and are being interviewed by the board. So I would expect that those would occur in closed session.
Thanks, Pat.
Beautiful. Thank you, Patrick, Tom, Deborah, and everyone on the call. Any other questions or concerns? Hearing none, I'll take a motion to adjourn the meeting.
I'll make the motion.
I think that was Bell and Bill second. All right. Our meeting is adjourned. We have 10:10.